This is the IBJ podcast for the week of August the 3rd, 2020, brought to you by the law firm Krieg DeVault. I'm Mason King. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. Windsor Jewelry has operated in downtown Indianapolis for the last 101 years. Through a succession of local owners, it has survived the Great Depression, World War II, the decline of downtown, the downtown's subsequent revival, and the Great Recession. Needless to say, the pandemic of 2020 is the latest entry in its dance card of calamities. Like many retail businesses, it needed to close for a while this spring. It reopened for business on May 27th, but it wouldn't make it through the weekend. Located just off of Monument Circle on the south spur of Meridian Street, Windsor Jewelry was among the businesses hardest hit by the riots and looting that broke out downtown on the weekend of May 29th through the 31st. Both the exterior and the interior of the store were completely wrecked over two consecutive nights, forcing another shutdown. It reopened in the second week of June, but limited to about half of its usual staff, working 4 days a week. To get back to something resembling normal, owner Greg Byers says downtown needs to get back to full strength. Of course, as we've recently discussed here on the podcast, just a fraction of downtown's usual workforce has returned, and many downtown employers are very hesitant to require it, while so many questions remain about the length and severity of the pandemic. I spoke with Greg Byers about how he has handled the 1-2 punch of the pandemic and then the vandalism in downtown's core. Now, he's been fortunate so far in that his insurance company has been cooperative with his claims for damages at the store, and he expects it to cover most of the cost. He also applied for and received a payroll protection program loan from the federal government to help pay employees. He didn't want to reveal the exact amount, but he confirmed it was less than $150,000, which is the level at which the Fed started publicly revealing the recipients and amounts. But his biggest problem, and the enduring problem, is foot traffic. He needs sales. We'll hear my interview with Greg in a moment. He has a couple of major concerns with what the Hogsett administration is doing to revive downtown, or more specifically, what it is not doing, and we'll address that in a segment afterwards. But first, here's our interview. Joining me in the IBJ podcast virtual studio is Greg Byers. Thanks so much for taking the time to speak with us.
Hi, Mason. Glad to be here.
Now, in preparing for our interview, I learned that Windsor Jewelry was established downtown in 1919. Is that correct?
That's correct. This is our 101st year downtown.
Thus, it has survived the Great Depression, World War II, the decline of downtown Indianapolis, the revival of downtown Indianapolis, and the Great Recession. Would you say in the last months, how close was Windsor Jewelry to going out of business?
I don't feel we are close to going out of business, but fortunately, with our longevity that we've had, I think it made it a little easier for me to muscle through the health crisis. You know, that was a long 3 months without the door open. But stores like ours can't continue on this path and expect to be here forever.
You bought Windsor Jewelers or Jewelry in 1998, is that right?
Correct. Well, I've been here since 1984. And when I came to the store, I was a goldsmith and a watchmaker, a jewelry designer, and I was at the bench. I wasn't up front in the retail part of it. And then as time went on, the owner needed help running the store. So that's when I got involved in the retail part or the front end. And that went really well for me. You know, I made a lot of great relationships. And so that's kind of where I'm at now.
Why did you want to buy the business?
Well, I was a bench jeweler up in Northwest Indiana for 20 years. And at the time, we made a move to the Indianapolis area. And I always wanted my own store. And so when I approached Herman Logan, the owner of Windsor Jewelry, I said my goal was to one day buy a jewelry store or work into one. And he was 72 at the time. And he said, you know, I can't promise you anything, but I'm 72 and, you know, I'm getting near retirement and I have nobody that wants to succeed me. So maybe it'll happen. And it did.
In a second, I'm going to want you to walk me through what happened on the weekend of May 30th. But I want to quickly back it up to Wednesday, May 27th. And I think you mentioned this before. What was significant about that Wednesday?
So that was the first day that we reopened after the health crisis, after being closed a little over 2.5 months.
And what was your impression of how things were going for those first few days?
Well, I was kind of like optimistic because we were very busy. You know, there were a lot of people that were waiting for us to come back because besides being a retail store where we do gifts and make jewelry, we do a lot of service and repair of people that own jewelry that really has a lot of meaning to them, been in their family for generations. And we have the capability to rehab those pieces, service them, maintain them, repair watches. And so we were busy with not only sales, but we were also, you know, busy with a lot of people that held back their repairs.
So walk me through what happened then early in the morning of Saturday, May the 30th.
So about maybe 1:15, 1:30 in the morning, my phone rings from the alarm company and they tell me that the glass breaks were set off. And what that means is either somebody pounded on the glass, there was a vibration, they're vibration sensors. And then we also have what's called motion detectors, so I can tell if there's anybody moving around in the space. And there was none of the motion detectors went off. So I was kind of hoping, we knew there was a protest, and I was hoping that it was just a lot of people yelling or pounding on a glass and set it off. So the alarm resets itself every 15 or 20 minutes. And so then 20 minutes later, I get another call. And this time, not only are the glass breaks going off, but all the motion detectors are going off. So that means there's people all over the store. And then about 1:45, there's a journalist in town, and he called me because we're friends. He said, Greg, he goes, you should see what's on Instagram. And they had a live feed of people coming and going in and out of my store. And that started, like I said, about 1:30. And every 20 minutes, I got another call from the alarm company because they're required to call me because it reset. And that went on to 4 in the morning. So there were people in and out, in and out, in and out for that length of time without any intervention.
And you're at home for those.
Correct. And I was not allowed to come down. IMPD, I called them with every time I got a call, even though my alarm company called, I called them and reported to 911. And I asked them, they said, there's no way you can come downtown. It's chaos. We're not even allowing our officers to go into that area right now.
So next day you get down there and what do you see?
So Saturday morning, you know, I get here as soon as I can. It's like 9 a.m. Everything kind of quieted down after 4:00. And an IMPD officer escorted me to the store because they still weren't sure what was going on in here. So we got here and assessed the situation. It was in total chaos, ransacked. All the glass in the front of the store had broken out. A lot of the showcase glass was smashed and broken, even though there was nothing in these cases. So then after we looked around, then we called an emergency board-up company. And they came and boarded up the front of the store and secured everything. And that kind of gave me peace of mind because I figured, okay, you know, the glass was easy to break, but now I've got all this plywood. So, you know, I've got a little better sense of security for tonight, Saturday, which was the scheduled protest. So the same drill about 1:15 in the morning. The alarm goes off because we still had some vibration sensors as they were pounding on the plywood. And they eventually managed to punch a large enough hole in the plywood that it was a man-sized hole, and same drill. It went on till 3:00, 4:00 in the morning. Again, the alarm's going every 20 minutes. Every time they reset, and then somebody moved in here and set it off again.
Wow. So again, they were entering the store.
Correct. And I have some video. Sometimes there was as many as 15 or 20 people in here running around, and that never stopped. They did steal things from me, burglarize the store, but I think that was a bonus to them. I don't think they came in here to steal. The bulk of what they did, I mean, once they got done like breaking the showcase glasses that were empty, then they went to every drawer and flipped them out, dumped them on the floor. They went into my repair departments, which are just drawers full of literally thousands of parts because we fix watches. And they took that and just, it was just thrown everywhere. Oh, and then they went into every individual office and just flipped everything upside down.
You mentioned that the cases were empty. And that is because, like, for the merchandise that you would have out on display during your regular hours, you put that in a safe at night, right?
Exactly. Every night, you know, our insurance company requires us to vault a huge percentage of what we own. That was a good thing that the majority of everything was safely stored, so we didn't have a catastrophic loss.
I remember in an interview that you did right after those nights that you were drawing a distinction between the people who were protesting and the people who, as you say, were trying to create havoc. Do you still kind of have that opinion?
Yeah, there's no doubt in my mind that the original protesters, that wasn't their motive or what they were planning to do. You know, because when we left Friday night, you know, they had already started to assemble to do a protest that really wasn't planned. We didn't know about Friday night. we knew about Saturday. And so anyway, I drove around the circle to the north side, and there were about, I don't know, maybe 150 plus protesters, all wearing coronavirus masks, all distancing, very peacefully, just getting their message out. And I texted all my employees. I go, well, the protest has already started. I go, but they seem really organized and peaceful, so I don't think we're going to have any issues, you know, tonight. And then it's my understanding after they finished, when at 9 o'clock-ish or when it started to get dark, that's when another group of disruptors, opportunists, I don't know what you want to call them, came in, and then they organized, and I think they helped draw in some people that weren't planning to do what happened that night. The fact that it happened in so many cities simultaneously, it was too organized to be something spontaneous.
So after what happens then on Saturday night into Sunday morning, you have to board up the store again.
Correct. Then, so Sunday morning, we all came down again, and now everybody is in panic mode downtown. The people that hadn't boarded up, now they're boarding up. Some of it was too late. They'd already lost their glass, you know, their doors, but some glass was salvageable. But yeah, that's what went on. It was crazy on Sunday. There were service trucks with plywood everywhere, and everybody for blocks each way from the circle boarded up. And then the following weekend, there was rumors that there was going to be an issue, and who hadn't boarded up definitely boarded up that weekend.
Did you feel some trepidation in those first days and maybe even the first weeks about trying to fix anything because something like that might happen again?
No doubt. All we wanted to do, like, we secured the store plywood-wise where I don't think anybody could have penetrated it. It was a whole different kind of board up the second time. Then, kind of on your thought there, you know, July 4th came and we still hadn't gotten our glass yet because it took quite a while for everybody to get their glass produced and installed. Well, you know, there was a rumor out that there may be issues over the 4th around the country, not necessarily Indianapolis, but just in general. So a lot of us that had our glass ready to go in before the 4th held off until after the 4th. I'm saying now, I guess I'd say we're 90-95% boards down and, you know, mostly glass down here. I've said we'll never forget 2020. So much was thrown at us, all of us. But, you know, we're moving forward.
When did you officially reopen?
Well, the 27th of May was officially reopened. And then it took me 2 weeks to get the store cleaned up enough that we could reopen again. So that would put me in the middle of June.
Can you give me an idea of how much it costs to get to where you are now?
So we're not there yet, but I'm guessing just in the glass, and I don't have a lot of my infrastructure done yet or itemized, but just in the glass, we're probably over $25,000, not counting what it's going to cost me to repair the damaged infrastructure, the displays, things that you normally use every day, calculators, cameras, you know, tools that a retail store would have. I haven't finished that bill yet.
And is that just money you had in the bank, or did you have to take out a loan for that?
Fortunately, the infrastructure is being covered by my insurance company. That's one component. You know, having business and customers coming in, that's a more important component to surviving this. And a good portion of that is health crisis related, you know, because people aren't back to work yet. You know, it's going to be a while before we get the right side up.
All right, let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsor. This is the IBJ Podcast.
The IBJ Podcast is brought to you by Krieg DeVault, a trusted and dynamic law firm representing a wide variety of local, regional, and national clients. Committed to each other and to every client, Krieg DeVault prides itself on integrity, professionalism, respect, and excellence. Financial institutions, global manufacturers, national healthcare providers, and successful organizations of all sizes and market focus rely on Krieg DeVault to create innovative and successful business solutions. Connect today at www.kriegdevault.com.
Okay, we're back with this week's edition of the IBJ Podcast. Our guest this week is Greg Byers, owner of downtown's Windsor Jewelry, which is trying to survive the twin challenges of the ongoing pandemic and the civil unrest from late May.
So you mentioned there are two different crises happening here. We have the pandemic,
right,
which obviously we're still in the middle of, and we don't know how long this is going to last. I was curious, did you apply for one of the PPP loans for small business?
I did. As soon as they were available, it took quite a while to complete all that process before we did get our money because I had to lay off everybody, and technically including myself, for those 2.5 months. I mean, we had no door swings. We had no business. We were forced to close.
So the PPP loans, aren't they supposed to help you cover the payroll?
Correct.
Did you need to hire everybody back first?
So that was an issue. The money came, you know, about a month in, and now we're still closed for a month and a half. And they realized that they had made a mistake on some of the requirements, because had I started to pay everybody when I got the money, it would have all been exhausted before I would have been allowed to open the store. And then when things were really rough after we opened the store, because it's still slow going, I wouldn't have had that money when I really needed it to get me down the road. That's what that money should have been for, is to get me down the road. Not when we couldn't, you know, it meant nothing when I got it in the beginning, because it wouldn't have helped anything. So fortunately, I was allowed to wait till I brought people back to spend it.
Now, I know that a big part of your business is people who work downtown.
Correct.
Obviously, right now, the working population downtown is just a fraction of what it would normally be. And nobody expects that really to get much better until about the end of the year. How do you generate foot traffic?
So, I mean, I'm not up to, you know, where we were when everything stopped. But fortunately, being a 101-year-old store, we have a tremendous loyal customer base that will not go anywhere else. They support us, and they know what has happened. And it's, I tell you, if anything has kept me energized and moving, it's been the fact that so many people have called me and said, what can I do to help? You know, what do you need? Can I buy a gift card? Those things are what is keeping me afloat. But how long that's going to last, you know, that everybody supporting us because of what happened, I don't know. So that's where I really need the downtown workforce to be back, because those are the ones that maybe they've never been in my store before, but we're close to their office. So when they need a gift or they need something fixed, we're the store of convenience for them. I'm going to need them eventually. I'm getting by without them now. It's not great, but I'm keeping the doors open. And that's why I haven't been able to bring back all my employees, because, you know, there's cost associated with running a business, you know, that you've got to control. And that's one of the only things I can control. You know, let's just cross our fingers that they do get back here sooner than later.
When you take a look at your, how well the business is doing, how does it compare to July of 2019?
It's about half.
How long can you hold out?
If things keep going the way they're going right now, I can hang in there. And I could, you know, fortunately, being an independent, I can really control my costs, and I can turn things off at the drop of a hat. You know, we're a 200 store chain. They have to plan a year out everything they do. So I'm fortunate in that way. But if we have another mandated shutdown, I don't know that I can weather much of that. I don't know what tomorrow's going to bring. Nobody does. This is so uncontrollable. The whole health crisis thing, and we every day it changes, and we just got to roll with it.
Yeah, I was going to ask you what you're feeling right now is about the long-term prospects for downtown.
You know, I don't know, but the thing that bothers me more than anything is how much effort and work our predecessors over the last couple generations have done to build this city and bring it to the point it is today, that probably were one of the number one cities, without a doubt, convention cities in the country. We're a big destination. For as small as we are, how many cities, any size, get a Super Bowl? And now to let all of that hard work and reputation in a short 3 or 4 months just slip away from us, I don't understand what's going on with our administration, why that they're not making a bigger effort to get this whole thing under control.
Are you talking about the city administration, the city council?
I'm talking about the city administration. They're the only ones who can move this thing forward. Until they make the decision to make this downtown the way it can be again. And I know we need people back down here, but we can't let it go into ruin. And I'm telling you, outside right now, nobody's controlling anything that's going on out my door. There's people that are allowed to basically, you know, move in and live on the street, I feel sorry for these people because they need help. And I know our shelters are closed now, and I know there's no hospitals to help them, but that's what I feel our city's job has to be, to find a place for the homeless people, the people that have mental health issues, to get help. And when I look outside, I'm not seeing anybody aiding these people.
Yeah, I know one of the things that a lot of businesses have done or have tried to do is go online and conduct their business online. Is that a place where you had a presence before, or someplace you're looking at maybe beefing up a presence?
Absolutely. And the health crisis really accelerated that process. You know, we do have e-commerce now, which we didn't have before. We did a lot of online sales, but face-to-face online, you know, where we would talk and build things for people, but we didn't have product that they could click a button and purchase it. But now we do. And I'm just in the process of redoing our website to make that even more effective for that process.
I know you have several grandchildren now and you're 65 years old. How long do you want to keep doing this?
Well, you know, if things go the way they're going, you know, not too long, but I love what I do. You know, and I've done it my whole life. Since I've been 15 years old, I was taught how to be a jeweler and a watchmaker. I apprenticed as a young boy, and it's what I know. And I love my job. You know, if I never have to leave and I could, you know, and if I could turn this store over to somebody, that would be the next generation, and I could help them as needed. That's what I would love to do eventually. It's inevitable that I'll have to retire. I don't have a timeline at this moment, but when you're 65, it's you know, it's right around the corner.
Well, I wish you the best.
Mason, you know what? This was nice to be able to tell this story. And again, I want to thank everybody who listens to this that has been supporting us. And those people are the reason why I'm going to move this store forward and get it back the way it was. And, you know, I want to be a part of downtown.
Well, great. Well, thanks again. I really appreciate the time.
All right. Take care. Thank you.
All right. So Greg has a couple of sharp critiques of Mayor Hogsett's administration. As it happens, IBJ's editorial board recently interviewed the mayor specifically about these issues. So I thought we'd include some of that interview. The first snippet addresses what the administration can do to rev up downtown's twin economic engines of the office workforce and tourism. Here's the mayor.
I do fundamentally believe that the time will come when the downtown is fully refueled and rockets forward. I am passionately optimistic about that. Now, the point you made, I think, is a valid one. What is the downtown's fuel? Well, the downtown's fuel are people. And right now, you know, we're a little bit low in the gas tank in terms of people coming downtown. And as you know and appreciate, businesses throughout the community have shared with me that they're simply going to encourage their employees to stay home for maybe the duration of this year, which presents even greater challenge to what the city is doing vis-a-vis downtown businesses to keep them going. That's why we've engaged in the PPE efforts to provide support for businesses in partnership with the Indy Chamber. That's why we announced a couple of weeks ago our commitment to 501c3 nonprofits for PPE. That's why we have engaged with Indy Chamber in our rapid response loan funds for particularly smaller businesses and minority-owned businesses throughout the community, but particularly those downtown. Those types of efforts, those initiatives are critical to helping us through this enormous challenge. And the truth is, as I know you all appreciate, the public health experts, the epidemiologists that I talk to say that, you know, 2020, the virus is going to be with us for some time. So we have been focused like a laser on trying to take steps. That's why the announcement a week or so ago of our marketing campaign to open up downtown, I mean, to encourage Hoosiers to come back downtown. That's not the answer. It, admittedly, it's a Band-Aid, but I do think it's an important message to be sending to the community that we are open, that our downtown remains vibrant despite the challenges, and that in the short term, we can get through these next 6 months. And I pray that a vaccine is found and that we can move to the next chapter of our lifetime.
Okay. And Greg's second concern is about the number of homeless people downtown. Mayor Hogsett also addressed what the city can and cannot do to help that population while discouraging panhandlers. About midway through, when he mentions the state legislature, he's referring to a law that state lawmakers passed in March that effectively banned begging for money throughout downtown. In June, a federal judge granted an injunction against the law, describing it as unconstitutional.
Much of the concern that has been expressed is the result of COVID-19. I mean, we have more people out on the streets than we have experienced before. And that's because whether it's the Reuben Engagement Center being closed, whether it's Horizon House having a positive coronavirus diagnosis that has closed it, and many of the social service partners that we work with, some shelters have, frankly, whether they've been closed or not, they are not at the capacity that they would normally be were it not for COVID-19. So the question is, what are we doing? Well, the council just recently appropriated $2 million to house rapid housing, rehousing in hotels for those who are currently without housing. We hope to use that to reopen the Reuben Engagement Center. Obviously, we continue to expand our commitment to the pathways to employment that the council considered and appropriated monies for last year, getting unhoused individuals into employment in the downtown, the kind of training that they need. We're putting them to work to clean the downtown, actually. And that is a program that has worked in other communities, and I think it is working here, although it's in its infancy. And then ultimately providing our commitment to permanent supportive housing for those individuals who find themselves homeless. And I hope that in so doing, the city is literally fully engaged in trying to address those challenges. Now, some of those challenges are outside of our control. I mean, on the one hand, the state legislature in the last session, engaged in legislation that would have substantially changed, I think, the landscape of downtown. But for time immemorial, we have been balancing the delicate balance between the constitutionality, which obviously was the reason why this last legislative enactment was struck down, with the way I would answer the question is, what the city has done is appropriate dollars to be used constructively to try to address the root causes of the challenges.
My thanks again to Greg Byers, as well as Mayor Hogsett. And folks, before you get on with the rest of your week, there are a few stories in the latest issue of IBJ that I want to bring to your attention. First up, Mickey Shuey takes a close look at the hotel market downtown now that plans have firmed up for the $550 million Pan Am Plaza project. The pandemic has had a paralyzing effect on several of the other projects that have been planned now that lending for hotel projects has dried up. And securing financing for the Marquis Hotel on Pan Am Plaza is far from a sure thing. Also in this issue, John Russell reports that some of the smaller hospitals across the state could be only months away from beginning the process of closing their doors, which could leave large sections of the state without quick access to emergency care, a maternity suite, or an operating room. And Mike Lopresti has an on-the-ground report of the state of professional baseball, jumping from a college summer league game at the otherwise idle Victory Field in Indianapolis to a Reds game in Cincinnati played in a stadium without any fans. Now you can read these stories in the latest print edition of IBJ or online at ibj.com. I will say it's a lot easier to get access to all of IBJ's award-winning business content if you have a subscription. It works out to about $2 per week, which is pretty good for the amount of information that can help you make important decisions in the next few months. Just go to ibj.com, click on the subscribe button. Thanks again for making time this week for the IBJ podcast, which is edited by Leslie Weidenbender. I'm Mason King. Hang in there, everybody. We'll be back again next week.